Number one, this is a podcast for small to medium businesses. We're going to talk marketing, hiring, leadership, human resources, taxes, operations, everything you need to run your business better. Number two, the experts you hear on this show are going to give you easy to understand tips that you can put in place quickly. Number three, every day you gotta laugh. Life is too short to take it seriously all the time. This is 3 for 3. Let's go. Hi, this is Kurt Clyden here with another episode of 3 for 3. And today we're going to be talking about running a family business, what it takes and what are some of the challenges when you are part of a family business, part of a second or third generation business, how that works. And this is something that I know is going to relate to a lot of the people listening to this show. We have a lot of clients that are running a family business, and Clyden Associates, of course, is also a family business as well. So I am really excited to hear today from Glenda Irvin Lehman. And Glenda is, she is with Lehman's in Kidron, Ohio. And let me introduce her a little bit here. Instead of saying why, today's speaker likes us to ask why not. Why not build a tiny house? Why not host goat yoga with cow cuddling? Why not order 2,000 custom bobbleheads of her father and surprise him? As the vice president of marketing for Lehman's and the daughter of the company founder Jay Lehman, Glenda Lehman Irvin's job is to help people take the next step on their journey to a simpler life. Get your farm cred on is her mantra, whether that means a small backyard garden or raising livestock and homeschooling with your 9 children. As a high school graduate, Glenda also went to college and has an MBA. Her work history involves journalism, speech writing, internal communications, and that was before she joined her family's business. Today, she is responsible for the marketing, content production, and public relations for Lehman's. Glenda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kurt.
I hope you're as excited about this topic as I am. And I know that going through this process of having a family business, is, I think there's a lot of upside to it, challenges as well. Before we get into some of your tips, when you were thinking about joining the family business, what went through your mind?
Well, my brother, Galen, and I, who worked together along with my father, although he's 90, but Galen grew up in the business. Right after high school, he was here, so he has that legacy knowledge. I, on the other hand, had more of the external, outside knowledge, getting a college degree, getting a master's degree, working several other professional places where it really didn't matter if my last name was Lehman or Irvin. And so by the two of us coming together, I think we both realized the value that the other person brought. In other words, if we were both brought up through the company, something would be missing. If we had both worked outside the company for a dozen years before joining it, something would be missing too. That said, if our children who haven't, there's no clear path that one of them has chosen to work here, but we would request that they do work someplace else in a professional capacity for at least a couple of years, recognizing the value that that can bring to a family business, especially, you know, in a small town like Kidron.
I absolutely agree with you. I did the same route where I worked another job as an editor for a magazine for several years before joining the family business. And you have to have a little bit of that different perspective to help you understand how you can help that family business a little bit. But give me just a little bit, and our listeners, a little bit of a perspective on how many members of your family are involved with the business.
Well, extended family, there's a number as far as aunts and uncles and cousins, but there are four of us siblings. Galen, my older brother, I will point out, is the president, and I'm a vice president. My younger brother, Kevin, worked for us briefly out of college, but he is in Vermont now working for a solar energy company. And my sister has always been the city gal, lived for a number of years in Chicago, and now she is in Minneapolis. So two involved, two not.
Okay. And can you give us just a little bit of history of the company before we get started?
Sure. Lehman's was founded by my dad in 1955, which if you do the math, you realize that next year is our 65th anniversary. When people come to Lehman's now, they may forget that for a long time it was a small business and dad worked 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Every small town had their little small town hardware, and Lehman Hardware and Appliance, as it was known then, was Kidron's small town hardware. Now, we all know that a lot of those have gone out of business with the effects of Home Depot and Lowe's and Walmart. But what Dad realized in the late 70s, early 80s is that he could continue carrying some of the products that the big boxes didn't want to carry, oil lamps and water pumps. Plus, he greatly admired the farming way of life, particularly among the Amish, and he wanted to ensure that the non-electric products that they needed to continue their way of life would remain. So over the years, things around him changed, and quite honestly, I have a feeling people said, this isn't going to work, Jay. Nobody wants this stuff anymore. You need to sell color TVs and, you know, electric appliances. But he stuck to it, and then things like the energy crisis of the early 70s and certainly Y2K, 1999, when the computers turned over to 2000, there was fears of widespread power outages, which didn't happen. But there have been power outages. Oh, I think just a week or two ago, I heard that there was one in Manhattan. So it definitely can happen. So today, we have moved from the place where if you're a farmer, Amish, homesteader, you come to us to get what you need, to the place that asks you, what do you want to do? Do you want to eat healthy? Do you want to get your children happy about chores? What is it that you want to do? And then how can we help? The ultimate end of that journey might be living off grid, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's simply reducing refined sugar in your diet. And we can talk about cooking with maple syrup and honey. So we're really helping people take the next step on that journey to a life that is more satisfying and sustainable.
And I know a lot of our listeners are going to be familiar with the Layman's store, and I certainly am. I've been there many times. It is one of the most unique stores that you will ever go into. You'll have things that you can find there that you won't find anywhere else in the world. And Glenda, you get people that come from really across the world to visit the store, don't you?
We do. We actually have a board where people can sign their names, and it's not uncommon in a week to have multiple countries and 17 to 20 different states. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we are kind of at the edge of Amish country. I don't think people fly from Australia to visit Layman's. Maybe there's a few of them, but I think perhaps they're here visiting family or doing business, perhaps in Cleveland, Columbus, and the question might come up, what is unusual about this area? And the answer would be Amish country. So they stop at Layman's first, we're kind of the gateway, and then they typically go on south through Holmes County and other counties in the area. So we're part of a big draw, and we're happy that we hopefully are people's first stop on that trip.
Well, fantastic. Well, Glenda, let's turn back to running a family business and tell me, for those that are involved with the family business, for those that may be considering getting into that, or for any children out there, look at their parents running a business, thinking about, should I join this? What's your first tip for someone in this situation?
Get some hats. Hats.
Okay. I know you sell hats at the store there, so clarify.
Well, no, this is a different kind of hat. This is actually a philosophical hat. For example, if I am talking to my brother and my father as the vice president of marketing, I will literally say, I am wearing the vice president of marketing hat. Okay, so that's very focused on my role. If I am saying something that I think is, oh, I don't know, somehow offensive to Dad or the company, I would say, I am wearing the daughter of the founder hat right now. And I don't think, you know, whatever that should be. I could also say that I am, I'm on the board for Layman's. So again, I would say, as someone wearing the Layman's board hat, because each one of those would allow me to speak into something differently. And typically, as a family member, you do carry multiple roles. You might even report to one person part of the time and report to somebody else the rest of the time. So know what hat you're wearing philosophically at all times, and feel free to vocalize it. You know, as the whatever my title is, wearing that hat, this is what I think.
Well, that's a great point of knowing where you stand and how you can communicate. I mean, I think it's one of the best things about a family business is when you're doing it successfully, you're communicating successfully. You can't succeed without that. Okay, so tip number one, know what different hats you can wear, which one you're wearing at the time. So what's number two?
Q-tip, quit taking it personally. Particularly when you work with people, say a spouse, that you have a relationship with, it's very difficult to realize work is work. Like, oh, like say if it's a creative campaign and say you and your dad or me and my brother were looking at it and I would say, you know, it's just not really the direction that we were going. The other person might say, well, can't you ever respect my ideas or why do you, you know, because Q-tip, quit taking it personally. And if there are personal jabs at work, that becomes a different conversation because that should not be happening. Work is work. After work is after work. So get a hat and quit taking it personally are the first two.
So Glenda, that's got to be one of the hardest things I think it is for people to get over because we hold these beliefs. We all want to see a company succeed and do the best for it, but it can be so hard to not let go of something that you believe in and see beyond some of the difficulties that you may be having there. Did it take you a while when you joined the family business to figure out how to do that?
It did. Some of that is my personality. Other people may not have an issue with it, but it really helped me to think, how would I feel if a stranger or a different coworker said this? And chances are it wouldn't make me feel offended personally. Therefore, it wasn't personal. I just took it that way. You know, you've heard the saying, you're 100% responsible for what you do and, you know, only partially responsible for somebody else. And so it's up to you to understand. It's part of professional maturity, too, is to realize when it's a personal dig or when it's a professional action item for the company to improve the business. Those are two very different things.
And a tip that goes along with that that I was reading recently is similar to that. And that is when you're hiring, hire your weaknesses and let them do what they do best. You know, figure out what you do well and do that and let other people handle the rest of the stuff and trust them with that.
That is so true. I know that for myself, I'm an opener. I start projects. So I need to surround myself with closers. If I was a closer, you know, wrapping everything up, finalizing the Excel spreadsheets, nothing new would happen. And so I would need to hire openers. And so that's one thing I know about myself. The other thing, to your point, there's a book out there called Strength Finders. Perhaps you've heard of it. But what companies typically do is hire somebody who's good at something and then try to train them to do something that they're not good at. Now, we all have parts of our job that we don't enjoy. I've spent time stuffing envelopes and doing other things. But if I am not good at creating financial statements, oh, let's have the accounting department do that instead. Right. And so particularly when it's a smaller company and you do have to wear multiple hats, determining, say there's only three or four of you. Okay. Who is going to take over, you know, creating the financial statements and who is going to take over creating the marketing plan?
Yeah, exactly. Spot on. Okay. Well, that brings us to our third tip. What do you have for us?
Define your role. I think at the very beginning of this, you talked about how important communication is. And, you know, your family, every family is different. My family, maybe the Mennonite heritage, tends to be a little conflict avoidance. So as opposed to explosive discussions at every turn, it's a little more difficult to bring things up. And I find the sooner that you do it, the better. For example, say I thought I was welcoming employees to the company banquet, but then someone else in my family got up and welcomed companies to the employee banquet. I would say something, maybe not at the banquet, the very next day, very lighthearted and casual. Hey, next time, let's talk about it and define who's going to welcome employees, because I had a thing written and I didn't get to do it. And then it just becomes part of something that you discuss. After we have big events, we typically do what we call a look back analysis. And basically that's what went right, what went wrong. And then the next time you do that event, you've got all of that documentation captured. And this is certainly just a less formal way to do it. You know, the banquet was great. Next time, let's figure out who's going to do what specifically so there's no confusion. That was just an example off the top of my head. But discussing things, not letting them fester, and a lot of that is defining roles. Who is doing what? Even if there's a lot of crossover. You know, you can still decide on odd days I do this and on even days you do this, you know, counting the cash box or whatever it is.
Right. Well, you know, an interesting, I think another turn of that is how you what kind of a leadership role you have within a family company. And so, I think a really tricky thing with family businesses out there, when a second generation or next generation comes into the business, where they start off so that it maintains the experience and the professionalism that that company may have had for many years. So when you started in the family business, Glenda, what kind of a leadership role did you have so that it did not upset the apple cart, as they say?
Well, I took over two kind of new positions that didn't really exist before, HR and marketing. And so that was a little bit different there. You know, a couple things that we did talk about, though, is that the business pays family members what they would pay an outside person to do the same job. There's two ways to run a family business. One, the business funds the family's ventures, or two, the family supports the business ventures. And we are definitely the latter. So if I was to be replaced, I would be replaced with somebody who has the same skill set, the same expectations, the same job description. And two, my father never insisted or demanded or, I mean, he more suggested or requested that we work for the family business. So we always knew it was not a, you know, you must do this. We never had that kind of pressure.
And so, Glenda, when it comes to the big decisions in your company, how do you make those? When there is a difference in opinions on something, is there a way that you go about making the decisions so that it's something that does not, as you say, you don't want to let things fester. You want to get that out of the open and made. But that's always a tricking point when you can't. It falls between the many, a few different roles in the company, and there's not one person that can make the final decision. How do you get some progress made when you've got some difference in opinions there among the family members?
Yeah, it really depends. If it's purely business, I would gather data and let the decision point to the data. For example, if I thought perhaps we weren't sending enough emails, I would show how many we had, what the revenue source was that was, what the projection was, if we could send more, and I would use numbers. If it's something more of a, and I would bring in other experts on the team. I think that's the key point. I'd bring in the digital guy and all of that. However, if something more of a personal nature, I would humbly suggest that siblings or parent-child never argue, even if it's over a business thing, in front of other staff members. Number one, it makes them feel very uncomfortable. And number two, if it's a heated discussion, chances are it will veer into the personal. So I would simply take it offline. If it's a solid business discussion, but it's getting somewhat heated. And I used to get those mixed up a lot, you know, what's, like I said, Q-tip, what's personal, what's not. But if you really look at it objectively, what are we talking about here? We're talking about money the business will spend to acquire new customers. Okay, that's business. How we go about doing that, there may be some personal shades to that, but I do think there's an extra responsibility on family members, particularly ones in leadership positions, to not bicker in front of staff members.
Yeah, I mean, oh boy, doesn't that apply to every business?
It does.
Anything across the board, you have those heated arguments, discussions, what have you, and you got to stop those from being part of that board meeting or Monday morning meeting, whatever it may be. Take that off to the side and get rid of that for the time being.
It kind of reminds me of when, you know, when you're a little kid and you go over to a friend's house and either the mom is yelling at your friend or the parents are arguing. You're just like, you just want to cringe and just get out of there. And it kind of makes me think of that same kind of feeling like, oh my goodness, I must leave now. And of course, we never want employees to feel that way.
Of course, yeah. So one last question here, Glenda, about running a family business. Would you have it any other way? If you could start from fresh, do you think it's worth it to be a part of the family business? Or do you think, you know what, if I had to start all over, maybe I'd do it differently?
Well, I'm fortunate because I had the best of both worlds. I had the corporate job and I got my MBA. And for me, working in a family business was particularly special because it was started by my father, not, you know, my grandfather or great-great-grandfather. Plus, it afforded me more flexibility when I had small children. When I worked at the corporation, it was pretty cutthroat. I mean, if you don't do it, we'll find somebody that will. You know what I mean? It was like you were expected to learn a second language and get another degree and pretty much keep up on things. And that was fine when I was married and didn't have small children. So I was fortunate to have everything I wanted as a working mother, just not at the same time. So my career was split between outside and inside, definite benefits and advantages to both, although I do think my path was best for me to go out on my own and do it and then to come back. And I think Galen would say his path was best for him.
Well, it sounds like you had a perfect balance there.
Oh, thank you.
Well, and just to recap for our listeners here, tip number one is to wear those different hats, understand what you've got, which hat you're wearing at the time. Number two, as you mentioned, the shortened version Q-tip, quit taking it personally. And number three, make sure you define your role and act accordingly. All right, Glenda. Well, that was fantastic. Thank you for your advice here. And are you ready for some really, really, really bad jokes?
I love really, really bad jokes. I hope there's a pun in there somewhere.
So one of the things I found, I try to tailor my jokes to the topic or the business. And gardening is something that a lot of your store visitors are engaged in. And I'm a gardener myself. I love gardening with my kids. In fact, I made a radish recipe for the first time last night, grew them for the first time. I love experimenting a little bit. So I picked out three gardening jokes, and I love bad jokes. I think gardening jokes may be the worst topic wise, which doesn't suit us real good for today. But, so Glenn, do you like a good bad joke?
I love a good bad joke.
Okay. Well, before we get into the jokes, my job here is to try to make you laugh with one of these. Your job, keep a straight face and respect these jokes for as bad as they are. Would you be up for a little wager?
Sure.
Okay. So I will often will give out maybe a Starbucks card if you like Starbucks or anything else that suits your fancy.
I love Starbucks.
Okay. So you keep a straight face. I'll send you a Starbucks card. And if I can get you to laugh, is there something that maybe we could send to one of our listeners?
How about a layman's gift card?
That sounds great. Let's do this. Joke number one.
All right.
Why couldn't the gardener plant any flowers?
Because he didn't have a green thumb.
Gardeners always have a green thumb. He couldn't plant any flowers because he hadn't botany. Botany is the key word there.
Yeah, I'm not laughing.
Yeah.
No.
Let's see if we can get you on this next one. Why do plants go to therapy?
Because they need somebody to talk to.
Well, they need to get to the root of their problems.
Of course. Now that one, you get a groan out of that one. Yes.
All right. Number three here. Why did the scarecrow win an award?
Because of where he was planted.
Oh, that's a good guess. It's close. But the scarecrow won an award because he was outstanding in his field.
Of course. All right. I'll laugh at that one because I want one of your listeners to win a gift card.
That was a pity laugh, but we'll take it.
It was kind of a pity laugh. Yeah, it was. But that's enough. All right.
Fair enough. Well, Glenda, thank you for being on the show. If one of our listeners wants to learn more about Layman's or get in touch with you, what's the best way to do so?
Probably our website, laymans.com. Of course, it's open all the time. Or the retail store in Kidron, which is about 4 miles south of Route 30 between Worcester and Canton. Open every day between 9 and 6, except on Sundays. We do have a very robust event schedule. Everything from lifestyle workshop classes to live music to goat yoga to the brand new tiny house. There's all kinds of things to see and do when you come down to Kidron and visit Layman's.
And Glenda, do you have any big events coming up on the schedule?
We do. We have a car show coming up in August. We have a fall festival in September. We have something every single weekend. Some things are bigger than others. We have a couple classes this weekend. On the 27th, we have Kent Rollins, a cowboy chef. I think he's from Oklahoma, and his specialty is cooking on an open fire. He has a YouTube channel, and he has like 480,000 subscribers or something like that. And so he partners with Certified Angus Beef in Worcester, and so he's going to come on over and do some grilling demos for us.
Well, that sounds great. Well, if you're listening to this and you miss any of the events that Glenda just mentioned, as she said, there is events going on pretty much every weekend, and I can testify whether it's fall or spring or summer, there's something good going on there. So definitely check it out. All right. Well, thank you for being on the show, Glenda, and thank you, listeners, for joining us for another episode of 3 for 3.
This is Kurt Clyden, and I thank you for tuning in to another episode of 3 for 3. If you're not listening to the podcast through an app on your mobile phone, head over to the podcast app on your iPhone or to the Google Play app for Androids. Click on the search tool in the app, type in 3 for 3, that's the number 3, F-O-R, and then the number 3 again, and then subscribe so you can get every episode automatically. We have some great episodes coming up, so I hope you join us for more. See you next time.
3 for 3 is produced by the marketing gurus at Clyden & Associates in Akron, Ohio. Clyden & Associates is a full-service marketing communications agency that has been in business since 1975. For more information about the company, please visit Clyden.com, that's K-L-E-I-D-O-N.com, or call 330-666-5984. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or sponsoring a show, please email Kurt, that's Kurt with a K, at Clyden.com. Until next episode, keep building a great business and always, always keep laughing.